Now the rumbling of the great organ swelled to a roar, pressing like a rising giant against the vaulted ceiling to burst through it. Fredar bent his head backward, his wide open, burning eyes stared unseeingly upward. He was never so near tears in his life. And helpless, he yielded himself up to the glowing moisture which dazzled him. Above him, the vault of heaven in lapis lazuli, hovering therein the 12-fold mystery, the signs of the zodiac in gold. Set higher above them, the 7 crown wands, the planets. High above all, a silver shining bevy of stars, the universe. The breakers of the notes dissolved the room into nothing. The organ which Fredar played stood in the middle of the sea. It was a reef upon which the waves foamed. Carrying crests of force, they dashed violently onward, and the 7th was always the mightiest. Shaking to her core, the old earth started from her sleep. Her torrents dried up, the mountains fell to ruin. From the rip-open depths the fire welled up, the earth burned with all she bore. The waves of the sea became waves of fire, the organ flared up, a roaring torch of music. The earth, the sea, and the him-blazing organ crashed and became ashes. But then, from the grey scattered ashes, on trembling wings, unspeakably beautiful and solitary, rose a bird with jeweled feathers. It uttered a mournful cry. It hovered hither and thither, not knowing where to settle. It hovered above the grave of the sea and above the corpse of the earth. But then, from the solemn mighty dance of the stars, one freed itself and neared the dead earth. It enveloped the mourning bird in its dear light. It was as strong as a deity, crying,
"To me! To me!"
Then the jeweled bird left the grave of the sea and earth and gave its sinking wings up to the powerful voice which bore it. It swept upwards and sang, becoming a note of the sphere, vanishing into eternity. Freda let his fingers slip from the keys. He bent forward and buried his face in his hands. Everywhere, everywhere, in an agonizing, blissful omnipresence, stood, in his vision, the one countenance. The austere countenance of the Virgin, the sweet countenance of the Mother. The agony and the desire with which he called and called for the one single vision, for which his racked heart had not even a name, except the one, Eterna. "You! You! You!" He let his hands sink and raised his eyes to the heights of the beautiful vaulted room in which his organ stood. From the sea deep blue of the heavens, from the flawless gold of the heavenly bodies, from the mysterious twilight around him, the girl looked at him with the deadly severity of purity, quite made a mistress, graciousness itself. Her voice, pity, every word a song. "You!" The captive nose struck against the wall, finding no way out. Fredar stood up and opened the windows. He pressed his eyes close, standing still, hardly breathing. He felt the proximity of the servants, standing silently, waiting for the command which would permit them to come to life. Those silent creatures ordained by his father were his all-powerful protectors, and at the same time, his keepers. He felt himself exposed and clothed, a cruel brightness which left nothing concealed, bathing him and everything in his workshop, which was almost the most highly situated room in Metropolis. I wish to be quiet. Silently the servants vanished, but all these doors which closed without the least sound could also, without the least sound, be opened again to the narrowest chink. His eyes aching, a smile, a rather bitter smile, drew down the corners of his mouth. He was a treasure which must be guarded as crown jewels, the son of a great father, and the only son. Really the only one? His thoughts stopped again at the exit of the circuit, and the vision was there again, and the scene, and the event. The Club of the Sons was perhaps one of the most beautiful buildings of Metropolis. It was more a district than a house. It embraced theaters, picture places, lecture rooms, and a library in which every book, printed in all 5 continents, was to be found. racetracks and a stadium, and the famous Eternal Gardens. It contained very extensive dwellings for the young sons of indulgent fathers, and it contained the dwellings of faultless male servants and handsome, well-trained female servants. Their chief task consisted in nothing but, at all times, to appear delightful and to be capriciously cheerful. And with the bewildering costume, their painted faces, and their eyes masked, they resembled delicate dolls of porcelain and brocade, devised by a master hand. Freda was but a rare visitant of the Club of the Sons. He preferred his workshop as the starry chapel in which his own one stood. But when once the desire took him to fling himself into the radiant joyousness of the stadium competitions, he was the most radiant and joyous of all, playing on from victory to victory with the love of a young god. On that day too. The milk-colored glass ceiling above the Eternal Gardens was an opal in the light which bathered it. Loving little women attended him, waiting rugously and jealously, from whose fine fingertips he would eat the fruit he desired. One was standing aside, mixing him a drink. From hip to knee below sparkling brocade, the slender, bare legs like ivory, in purple, peaked shoes, and pomegranate red mouth. She smiled so unknowingly down at the beverage that it caused the other girls to laugh aloud. Infected, Freda also began to laugh. The laughter induced the friends for no reason, only because they were young and carefree, to join in the cheerful sound. Like a joyously ringing rainbow, peal upon peal of laughter arched itself gaily above the young people. Then suddenly Freda turned his head. His hands, which were resting on the hips of the drink mixer, lost hold of her. The laughter ceased. No one of the friends moved. They just stood and looked. The door of the Eternal Gardens had opened, and through the door came a procession of children. They were all holding hands. They had dwarf faces, grey and ancient. They were little ghost-like skeletons covered with faded rags and smocks. They had colorless hair and colorless eyes. They walked on emaciated bare feet. Noiselessly, they followed their leader. Their leader was a girl, the austere countenance of the virgin, the sweet countenance of the mother. She held a skinny child by each hand. Her beautiful brow in the diamond of goodness, her voice pity, every word a song. She released the children and stretched forward her hand, motioning toward the friends and saying to the children,
"Look, these are your brothers."
And motioning toward the children, she said to the friends,
"Look, these are your brothers."
She waited, stood still, and her gaze rested upon Freda. Then the servants came, the doorkeepers came. Between these walls of marble and glass and the opal dome of the Eternal Gardens, there reigned for a short time an unprecedented confusion of noise, indignation, and embarrassment. The girl appeared still to be waiting, nobody there to touch her. Her eyes rested perpetually on Freda. Then she took her eyes from his, and, stooping a little, took the children's hands again, turned, and led the procession out. The door swung to behind her. The servants disappeared with many apologies. All was emptiness and silence. Had not the large number of witnesses perceived the event, they would have been inclined to put it down to hallucination. Near Freda, the little drink mixer was sobbing uncontrollably. With a leisurely movement, Freda bent towards her and suddenly twitched the mask, the narrow black mask, from her eyes. Her hands flew up, clutching, and remained hanging stiffly in the air. A little painted face stared, horror-stricken at the man. The eyes exposed were senseless, empty. The Eternal Gardens oscillated, the beautiful beings in it, even if temporarily, thrown out of balance, shone in their cleanly abundance. The odor of freshness which pervaded everywhere was like the breath of a dewy garden. Freda looked down at himself. He wore, as all the youth in the House of the Suns, the white silks, which they wore but once, the soft, supple shoes, with the noiseless soles. He looked at his friends. He saw these beings who never wearied unless from a spoil, who never sweat dullness from sport, who were never out of breath unless from sport. Beings requiring their joyous games in order that their food and drink might agree with them, in order to be able to sleep well and digest easily. The tables at which they had all eaten were laid as beforehand with untouched dishes. Wine, golden and purple, embedded in eyes of warmth, was there, proffering itself like the loving little women. Now the music was playing again. It had been silenced when the girlish voice spoke the five soft words.
"Look, these are your brothers."
And one more time with her eyes resting on Freda.
"Look, these are your brothers."
As one suffocating, Frederick sprang up. He dashed the door, he ran along passages and down steps. He came to the entrance.
"Who was that girl?"
Perplexed shrugs, apologies. The occurrence was inexcusable. The servants knew it. Dismissals in plenty will be distributed. The major domo was pale with anger. But Frederick, gazing into space, said, I do not wish that anyone should suffer for what has happened. Nobody is to be dismissed. I do not wish it." The majordomo bore in silence. He was accustomed to whims in the Club of the Suns, and so he asked,
"Who is the girl? Can anybody tell me?"
Freda remained silent. He shook his head, first slowly, then violently. "No one does. Do not set a bloodhound on the track of a sacred white hen. Nobody is to inquire about her." He felt the soulless glance of the strange, hired person upon his face. He felt himself poor and besmirched, in an ill temper which rendered him as wretched as though he had poison in his veins. He left the club. He walked home and thought going into exile. He shut himself up in his workroom and worked. At night, he clung to his instrumental and forced the monstrous solitude of Jupiter and Saturn down to him. Nothing could help him, nothing. In an agonizing, blissful, omnipresent stood before his vision, austere countenance of the Virgin, the sweet countenance of the Mother, and a voice spoke,
"Look, these are your brothers."
And the glory of the heavens was nothing, and the intoxication of world was nothing, and the conflagration which wiped out the sea could not wipe out the soft voice of the girl.
"Look, these are your brothers."
My God, my God.